To the Tuga, the Everything Portuguese Soccer Podcast. Mitch, Christian, I'm Kevin. Thanks again for tuning in. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about as Portugal has clinched a spot in the World Cup qualifying playoff final against North Macedonia as they pull off a massive upset against Italy. I'll be honest, guys, I'm kind of glad it's not Portugal versus Italy. Not that I was worried about the Italians, but in the off chance we would have lost, to have to deal with the Italian fans, that would have been difficult. But, all right, enough of that, though. Portugal defeats Turkey 3-1. Let's talk about that game. Fernando Santos, I mean, we kind of talked about it ahead of time. Some of his lineup decisions were a little questionable a few minutes before the game. Some of them ended up being the right call. So I throw it to you guys. How did things look for Portugal? 3-1 over Turkey.
Christian? First of all, shout out to Richie Ferrer for hosting all of us at his house. It might have to be the new hotspot for us to watch the games. Also, I don't know if it was a good omen to order Italian sandwiches before we ate, because, yeah, man, it didn't go out so well for them. Buddy, it was like 36 shots to 4, and, man, Macedonia pulled it out, man. It was awesome. Like, I mean, a part of me wanted Portugal to play Italy, but obviously, if I had the choice, I'd pick North Macedonia. That being said, it won't be an easy game because, you know, I was just checking on the way here some of the teams they beat. They beat Germany away. They beat Italy. They beat, I believe it was Armenia, 5-0. And I don't know if you remember.
We'll get to that in a second. Let's go with Portugal-Turkey, though. What happened there? Why, like, was Fernando Santos making the right decisions here?
You know what? I gotta bite my tongue here, and you know what?
I love it.
No, I say a lot of stuff, but I'm really good with owning. If I'm wrong, I'll say it. And before the game, Mitch is my witness. I was bashing the Otavio start. I was like, Otavio this, Otavio that. Really, Otavio? You should have done this. You should have done that. But I'll be the first one to say it, man. He had a hell of a game. He having him start, you know what, helped Portugal a lot, man. He was pressing high. He was winning balls back. He scored and had an assist. And you know what? Another player I like that start was Diogo Costa. That was a huge, huge risk for Fernando Santos. He's a really young guy. Hasn't fully proven himself. But personally, I don't know what you think, Mitch. I think him playing added a lot to our team just because how good he is with his feet. You know, that gives that extra dimension of, you know, he can pass the ball back, swing it left and right, whereas Rui Patricio, as you know, isn't the best with his feet.
Yeah. There was a few surprises. Diogo Costa and Otavio being the two main ones that we saw. We were really, you know, trying to figure out how Otavio was gonna slot into this formation. You know, was it gonna stick to the, you know, classic 4-3-3, which it basically was, except you know, Otavio, you know, did help out a little bit more in the midfield, but it was a kind of a makeshift 4-4-2, 4-3-3 with Otavio playing almost like a false stream. And doing, like you say, a lot of that high press work. He's got a super, super high work rate. And that's something that we see week in, week out in the Portuguese league. But he showed it again, you know, for Portugal today. He was, you know, as I say in Portuguese, like he was just all over the field, that high press, chasing down balls. And then, of course, he's really good with the ball at his feet. So his distribution game was on point. He was really good. His reaction time on the goal was phenomenal. I mean, he was the first one. As soon as Bernardo Silva, the ball came off his foot, Otavio was running towards the net. So, you know, there was a lot of good things that he did. I think Diogo Costa was another one that we questioned before the game. You know, was this the right time for a guy like Diogo Costa to start to make his way as the number one shot stopper for the Seleção? You know, obviously he proved he had a decent game. I don't know that he was tested all that much. I think you make a really good point. He played well with the ball at his feet, which added and almost, it's almost that extra man, right? It's that 11th man that you can kind of count on at the back, and that extra sweeper, if you will, to kind of take the ball and be that outlet, that extra outlet, which you know, in a couple of occasions proved useful. But all in all, as much as we've roasted Fernand Sanch on this podcast a few times, once or twice, I have to, and like you, Christian, I will give credit where credit is due. He got it right. He made some very, very pivotal choices, and I think choosing two Port players to start in this game at home, I think that had a little bit to do with it too, because playing in front of their own fans, in front of the stadium that they play week in, week out at, I think that had a lot to do with it as well. And emotionally and motivationally, I think it got the best out of those players. So I think it was well done. Well done, Fernand Sanch. Well done, Slesson. A couple things I wasn't happy about. I think we let off the gas way too much after in the second half, and even after the first goal, we even said it watching the game, they dropped into a different gear. And I think, you know, we allowed kind of Turkey to get back in the game. I mean, we're all talking a lot of good things about Portugal, but let's call a spade a spade. If Yilmaz scores that penalty shot, we may be having a different conversation, right?
Yeah, for 1,000%. Sure. Another thing, sorry if I cut you off, one other thing I don't want to go without saying is the addition of Bernardo Silva in the midfield.
Yes.
I've talked about it a lot in previous podcasts. He's been playing that in Manchester City. And I think, I don't know what you guys think, I think him on the ball in the midfield helped us so much. And a guy like João Moutinho behind them, pulling guys back. He does things off the ball that if you don't really understand the game, it would go unnoticed. But you know, if you have a little bit of higher soccer IQ, you can see how pivotal he was in that midfield, dragging guys back, pulling guys off. You know, those passes in the midfield, I feel like, you know, that was another big addition for Fernand Sanch. Yeah.
They looked very confident pretty much all throughout. I was a little worried about, you know, their back line, especially, you know, without Pep. I mean, we all know how great Pep is and just how confident he is back there. But you know what? Portugal played really well. They played confidently. They played, they knew what the job was and they had to get it done. By the way, hello to our North Macedonia fans tuning in, trying to get some intel on their, on the other teams.
Thanks for watching, buddy. Appreciate it.
Exactly. Right. you know, we talked a lot about the good that Fernand Sanch did, and I agree. I think he did a wonderful job selecting this team. There's always a lot of pressure with that, and it is one of those situations. It's, I guess, a good problem to have when you have an embarrassment of riches that Portugal does. It is difficult to find the right pieces to put that puzzle, because each game is different, and they have to handle it differently. But the one thing that I saw a lot of people talking about online, and I'm curious to see what you guys say, is with Cristiano Ronaldo, should he have been subbed out at about the 75th minute of the game to bring in some fresh legs? People were saying that he was a little tired. People were saying that he wasn't looking as strong. Do you pull him out at that point of the game? You look at it, pros and cons. You're bringing in fresh legs. You're bringing in a different look. The cons, this is still a big game. At that point, Portugal was only up 2-1. You risk that opportunity that, hey, had they scored on that penalty shot, then you're without Ronaldo for the rest of the game. Was it a good decision? If you were on the touchline, what would you have done?
Christian, go first.
So we have a group chat that we talk. We have a lot of our good friends are in there, and there that was one of the big discussions we had, was should he have been subbed off? My I was sort of defending him staying on, not because I was against him getting subbed off. If he got subbed off, I'd be 100% okay with it. But my stance was, if he stays on, I am also okay with it, because he is the captain. He is the leader of the team. Yes, he's missing a yard, like my boy Richie likes to say. But he adds other elements to the team. If you ever watch him play, although he can't run like he used to, he's always communicating with the team. Run there, go over here, watch out for this, watch out for that. There's that aspect. He's the captain. People look up to this guy, and he does bring that Ronaldo factor. He can be quiet the whole game, and then out of nowhere, he could score. The counter argument to that is we were winning 2-1. We probably could have pressed high. Okay, I get that. But also, 2-1, that's a shaky score line. It's nice to have that presence in the midfield that he could score. And he almost did. He hit the crossbar. And one more thing before I let Mitch take the mic here. He's probably going to roast me a little bit. But He also demands a lot of respect. So him being there, people are watching him, man. He's going to have two guys on him all the time. Just him being on the field, you know, opens up a lot of space for other players. So should he have got subbed off? Yes, I've been 100% okay with him being subbed off. My counter argument, again, saying is if he stays on, I'm also okay with it. So that's my stance on it. take the mic, Mitch.
No. So here's the thing. I totally get your position in the sense that when he is on the field, he will always, no matter what level of fitness he's at, he will always attract two bodies at the minimum, because anybody in their right mind is not going to leave Cristiano Ronaldo, no matter how bagged he is, by himself, because, you know, there's always that threat level there, which, to your point, will allow Portugal to it will kind of liberate some other players to potentially kind of score and create chances and do all that. However, in this game, Ronaldo was not at tip top. I mean, he had a couple of good plays, good touches, and helped out in a couple of situations that helped us score. But I think if you all can read lips at the end of the game, Ronaldo was not happy. And I believe the words he said to Elie Duval at the end of the game was "Gran merda." He's his own biggest critic. I think he would be the first one to say that he was not on his game, and he was not a contributing member to the team. To me, the last half hour of the game, he was not a contributing member of the team. I think he was actually a hindrance to us. And when you are, to your point, when you are 2-1 up, you need 11 guys on that field who are chasing balls down, who are active in the play. And I think at that point, as a coach, you have to do what's best for the team. And where I get upset with this argument is the people who stand up and say, you can't take Ronaldo off because of who he is. That's where I get upset with this argument, because this is not about Cristiano Ronaldo. This is about a Seleção Nacional.
Yes.
And people saying, well, you can't take him off because, you know, he's Cristiano Ronaldo and you can't do that. And ta 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 ta. No, I'm sorry. And you know what? If Ronaldo cannot accept that he is 37 years old, and as important as he is and has always been to the Seleção, his ego at some point, guys, over the next little while, his ego is going to have to take a backseat at some point. And I think that has to be abundantly clear to him. And if Fernando Santos and him are not having that conversation, if Fernando Santos has not already sat down and had that difficult conversation with Ronaldo, where it goes something like, buddy, as amazing as you are, as important as you know you are, there may be an important game where I take you off, and you have to be okay with that. And the team needs you to be okay with that. I don't know if you guys remember 2004.
I was just going to say that. You're stealing my thunder.
Luis Figo.
Kevin knows exactly where I'm going with this. 2004, yeah. Portugal, England, in Portugal, no Estádio da Luz. We're losing 1-0 to England in the 84th, 85th minute.
Yep.
Luis Felipe Scolari makes the seemingly impossible decision of subbing off Luis Figo for Helder Postiga. And if you guys remember, Figo did not stay on the bench. He went directly to the dressing room. He did not come out for the rest of the game. Helder Postiga came on. Helder Postiga scored the tying goal. And then, of course, Helder Postiga had the disgusting confidence of doing a Panenka freaking little chip penalty shot that ended up kind of winning us the game. Those decisions from a coach, as much as Luis Figo had his ego battered, no doubt from that, those are the type of decisions that somebody like a Luis Felipe Scolari in that situation had to put the team above the individual. And sure. And I think those are the type of decisions that Fernando Sanches is going to have to at least be comfortable making.
And, so, and that's the you know, the crux of this conversation is, you know, again, using 2004 as an example, looking back at it now, it was clear that that was, you know, the TSN turning point, if you will, in that tournament for Portugal. You could also take a look at the fact that that was signaling the end of the golden generation, the beginning of the new generation, right? You could look at all of that stuff. I will say the risk that does come with this is, look, 1998, for all of you that are hockey fans, 1998, Nagano Olympics, Canada goes to a shootout. Who's sitting on the bench? Wayne Gretzky, the greatest of all time, sitting on the bench, never hit the ice for the shootout. And that's the risk that to this day, people still debate that call. Now, to your point, you have to go and base things on a game-by-game basis. Yeah, if Ronaldo is playing well, if he's on his game, you're never going to take him out. Absolutely. But when it's clear that he's not doing well, you've got to make that decision. This isn't a Cristiano Ronaldo ego move. This is a coaching decision. So Fernando Sanches, I love the moves that he did. I thought he coached a very good game against Turkey, but you need to sometimes make those decisions as well. We have a couple of comments here that I want to get across. Kevin Giralds, thanks for tuning in. He says, yes, Ronaldo was tired, couldn't chase balls down. He was completely gassed. We were winning. We didn't need to score. We needed to defend. Fernando Sanches was too scared to do the right thing. He also adds, the team is more important than any player. You are 100% right. And Richie, as well, tuning in. Thanks for tuning in. Says Turkey was growing and sensing they could push forward. Major reason why Turkey almost drew level was due to our lack of forward pressing, and we need to learn how to close out games. So really interesting insights there. The one thing that I thought was really interesting too, Fernando Sanches after the game, he kind of talked about how everything was going well, and then they kind of fell back. They weren't playing as cohesively. They were almost defending too much there. But the way he kind of said it, and maybe I didn't hear it. I only read the kind of transcript from it. So again, sometimes things get lost in translation or so forth. But the way I read it almost kind of came across that Fernando Sanches was like, hey, this is kind of on the players in the sense of they are the ones that need to kind of pick it up there. I don't know if you guys read it the same way or not, but that's certainly how I saw it.
Yeah, and he does have a point, but at the same time, if I'm the coach, I'm screaming my ass off to get these players in gear. That's what the coach's job. He will dictate the pace that these players push. And you know, as much as I know, he kind of has that laissez-faire approach of let these guys play the way they want a little bit. If you're seeing that the team has dropped into second gear or third gear kind of thing, and we're not pushing the way we were, man, you gotta bump them up. Like, we can't be dropping the pace, and that to me was our biggest fault in the game, was just letting our players drop our guard and just becoming complacent and allowing Turkey to kind of slowly get back into the game. One goal, and you guys know this, anybody that follows sports, 2-0 lead is one of the most dangerous leads to have, because it takes one goal, it's a momentum shift, it's the tying goal, and then you know, everything's open from there, right? So it's always a dangerous lead to have, and it was a dangerous game that we were playing by kind of just sitting back and allowing Turkey to get back in the game.
For sure. As well as Fernando Sanches, you know, got it tactically right with, like we touched up on with Otávio and even his subs. His subs, I don't want to go without saying, like Mateusz Nunes came in, scored the goal off a pass from Rafael Leão, both subs that came on. I felt like those subs came in and gave a lot of energy. Even Ronaldo almost scored at the end, given from those substitutions that came in. I felt like he hit that really, really good. That being said, where I think he got it really wrong, and I get why he did it, so I can't really bash him too much. I get where he was coming from. You need experienced guys in the back, but I felt like Danilo, I don't know what you guys think, had an absolutely horrendous game. There was even one time where I believe it was either 2-0 or 2-1. I don't remember the exact time, but he had the ball in the back and he gave it right away to the other team. There was a few of those. He didn't look fast. He didn't look confident. Honestly, he looked like he didn't belong on that national team. Font, he did the best he could. Honestly, given his age, how fast he is, he couldn't do much better. But that being said, that guy turned like a freight train. He was slow. although he came back, he did some good tackles, but even when he had the lead on guys, he was still barely getting there and going. I understand Diaz is gone. I understand Pep will be back. I get that. But I would have liked to see a guy like Inacio come in. I get he's not experienced, but you know, he won the league last year. He has Champions Leagues under his belt. He is shown to be consistent and a very good player. Not only that, he's a great passer of the ball. He's good for these, well, a game like Turkey, even a game like Macedonia, where we're going to be pressing them up. Let's call it how it is. We're going to be all over them. Whether we score or not, they're a very organized team. But a guy that can pass the ball up through the back, like Inacio, I would prefer him even over a guy like Font. Or even Danilo. So I think it would have been a good time. Although it's a little bit of a stretch, I'll repeat myself, that, you know, he wanted to go with his experience, guys. So I'm not going to bash him too much for that. But I feel like that's the one spot that we, you know, we were really shaky in the back. And when they pressed us, there was times, like you guys mentioned, where we were up against it, man. And if Yilmaz scored that goal, momentum switches, who knows what happened.
So it'll be interesting to see how things change once, I mean, Pep will almost certainly be thrust into the lineup as well. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that changes and how he changes tactics going up against North Macedonia, because that was odd. We're getting a fun little audio here. Look, I think what's going to be interesting now is Portugal, they managed to get the win, 3-1. They return to the Estádio do Dragão tomorrow, where they take on North Macedonia. Everyone was expecting it to be Italy. We did talk about how, hey, you can't take North Macedonia for granted. You mentioned it earlier in the show, Christian, that North Macedonia, they beat Germany in qualifying. You know, they have now beaten Italy as well. Like, this is a team that, look, it's shades of Greece in 2004. They're going to be holding back, and then it's that one counterattack that they're going to make it count, and you have to try and take advantage. I think Italy had like 35 shot attempts or something like that against North Macedonia, which is just out of this world. I mean, if Portugal plays the way we know that they can play, and with the offense that they have, I mean, in theory, this should be an easy job. But, I mean, as the Italians showed, this is going to be no pushover. So what do we think going up against North Macedonia? What does Portugal have to do to beat them? And then we can discuss the possible lineup tweaks that you would make. So let's start off with North Macedonia. What do we do to get to beat them? How is that game going to play out?
Well, I think just looking back at the Italy game, you know, we were obviously watching the Portugal game, so we didn't get to see, you know, minute by minute what was happening. But, you know, I watched pretty extensive highlights of the game. And the one thing, and talking to some Italian friends of mine, one thing was that Italy just could not finish. They were not clinical enough in the final third. They could not put the ball in the back of the net. And I think that is the one big difference that we have over Italy right now. Is I think up front we have a lot more clinical players that can put the ball in back of the net and, you know, put the game away early. And I think that's one of the major things that we need to try and focus on. I think we need to come out with the same intensity that we did against Turkey. I think we need to take the game to them. You know, we can't sit back. And that's a big, big thing. You know, we need to take the game to them and we need to be clinical. And, you know, it's going to be a tactically frustrating game, because I feel like Macedonia is going to do, you know, very similar to what they did against Italy. They're going to put 11 guys behind the ball and they're going to try to hit us on the counterattack. And to Christian's point, I think we need to be very careful with our center back selections, because on the counterattack, the one thing that can kill you is speed. And José Font, Danilo, not so much on the speed side, but José Font, especially on the speed side, looked very, very suspicious, you know, at the back there. Yes, he's got the experience to kind of get himself out of those situations. But, you know, if we get somebody with speed up front, that's, you know, on a quick counterattack, and we've got José Font trucking back, it could spell danger for us, especially if, you know, we're going to be taking the game, we're going to be high pressing, our wing backs are going to be, you know, our full backs are going to be high up the field. So I mean, it's going to be one of those things. We need to be very, very careful that we don't concede on the counter. And to that point, Christian, you're 100% right. Danilo doesn't have to me, he doesn't have a spot on the field, let alone at center back. Pep is going to be back for this game, which is good. So I think Pep replaces Font. And then, Pep will naturally replace Danilo. And then the question is, do you go with a Pep-Font dupla, or do you go with Pep and potentially somebody like Gonçalo Inácio or Thiago Diallo? I think this is the time for Gonçalo Inácio to step in. And, you know, I don't know if Fernan Sánchez will risk giving him the start in a game like this. But I think the risk reward versus starting Inácio, who maybe be a little bit inexperienced, versus Font potentially getting caught speed wise. I think I take the risk of Inácio's inexperience over the risk of Font's speed or lack thereof.
For sure. Yeah, our back line is going to look a little different, like you mentioned. You touched up on it pretty good. Is Pep will come in, and also a guy like João Cancelo. They're going to add a lot to our team. Like you touched up on already, Font or Inácio. I mean, after what we've seen, Font couldn't do much better than what he does. So you can't really hate on him. It's just his age. It's who he is. I think it is time for a guy like Inácio. I know it's a do or die game. I get what like people's concerns would be, but man, we need some speed. Especially since Macedonia, that's how they're going to get us, is on the counter attack. I mean, you need pace back there. So,
and they're going to have Elmas back from Napoli. One of the best players, arguably their best player, is going to be back in this game.
Our Macedonian buddy here, you already touched up on it.
Yeah, there's two players back from suspension there for North Macedonia. So they are going to be a vastly different team. I think part of it too is, look, Portugal just can't get frustrated. Portugal's that type of team that look against when they played Ireland there in qualifying, when they just were up against a really difficult goaltender there. They were clearly getting frustrated. They were able to, you know, get the job done like late at the end in that one game. But, you know, frustration can sometimes get the better of them. What I do like is the mindset going into this game. Already Cristiano Ronaldo saying, hey, I hope that when they start the national anthem, they stop the music and just let the crowd sing with the players. We're all united. We're all one. This is shades of 2004 when Luis Felipe Scolari came in and said, it surprises me that you don't see Portuguese flags in cities and around the country. And like, he's really trying to unite the country, be one. Look, we saw this with the Canadian national team. They're on a roll. They finally qualified for the World Cup, first time since 1986. Congratulations, by the way. A couple of Portuguese players, Steven Vitória and Steven Eustáquio. But, you know, John Herdman, their coach, he has a sword with him, and he's knighting all the players so they can be a part of a brotherhood, part of one. That's the cohesion that you need, that belief to get you over the top, and that's looking good for Portugal. Conversely, that's probably looking good for North Macedonia as well, because they're really believing in themselves that they could get the job done. And hey, when you have wins against Germany and Italy under your belt, don't underestimate them.
Yeah, this was no small feat for North Macedonia to go in and beat Italy at home 1-0. So if as much as the Portuguese national team is going to go in, you know, riding a high right now, North Macedonia is coming off an unbelievable, unreal high. I mean, I'm sure they are absolutely being just showered with praise in their country, and they are going to be more motivated than any team we could be looking to play. They are going to be absolutely up for this. And, you know, to them right now, they've already knocked out the European champions. And, you know, to knock us out right now is not out of the realm of, you know, possibilities for them. So they're going to come into this, and they are going to believe that they can win this game. So it's not just a game where they're coming in and, you know, they're going to try and frustrate us. No, they're going to come in with the belief that they can win this game, and that is something very dangerous to play it against.
I think the best case scenario for Macedonia is if we don't score right away. The longer these kind of games drag on, it's going to Macedonia is going to keep growing and growing in confidence, much like they did against Italy. Yeah. I feel like our tactic, I mean, we always want to score, but our tactic is to go out hard. And if we get that early goal, you know what I mean? That's going to be massive for us, because a team like Macedonia, although they can do it, if we go up, I know we did it against Serbia, but but I think if we go up early against a team like Macedonia, we'll force them to open up. It's a team that's so organized and so hard to break down. Yeah. It's going to be a massive, massive.
Yeah, you're not wrong, but I'm glad you mentioned the Serbia thing because Portugal did score early against them. Yeah. They held back, and that turned out to be a big mistake, which, again, going back to my earlier comment, I think Fernando Santos is starting to realize that, and or maybe it was a little bit on the player's side. So maybe there does has to be more yelling on the sidelines. Maybe João Pinto is the guy to do that. Lord knows he's yelled a lot in his time, so he could get it done.
Yeah, for sure.
Question, Bruno Fernandes, what did you, how did you feel about his game against Turkey, and would you start him again?
I don't think it was his best game, but he did do a lot of things that, you know, he's just one of those players that does things that you don't really see unless you're really paying attention. There was one play where he did an amazing pass to Cristiano Ronaldo, and Ronaldo unfortunately slipped, but that little dish pass was beautiful. Just those little quick passes, and although it wasn't his best game, I'll repeat myself, it wasn't his best game, but he does add a little bit of element, and he does have that bomb from the midfield. He can score from anywhere, man. So I think for these big games, you got to play your big players. I'm a strong believer your best player should play in these games.
And João Moutinho starts in the midfield again?
I would keep it the exact same thing, man. Why? Don't change something that's not broke. Obviously, the defense we talked about, that needs to be changed. But the way they set up against Turkey, I think that would be ideal, man. Start Otavio, man. I'll bite my tongue. Start Otavio.
Yeah. Oh, he got it right. He got it right with starting Otavio. Rich saying the 12th man will be extremely important tomorrow night. 100% agree. Portugal needs to set the tone early on with wing play, aerial attacks, and shooting on sight. I think the tough part with the aerial attacks, though, is it's going to be difficult to create that with the way North Macedonia plays. Like, I feel like it's just going to be a lot of shots from outside the box. Like, they're just going to be kind of tightening it up in there. But again, I haven't seen a lot of North Macedonia games, so it's tough for me to say.
Isto vai ser jogo entre linhas. That's where we need to win this game. And that's where we're going to be able to break them down. That to me has to be our interplay, finding those spaces, making those runs in behind the players, their defenders, catching them off, using our speed to make those 1-2 plays. That's where we're going to win this game. You know, pumping balls into the box, you know, that can't be our strategy. This has to be played. We have to win the game in the midfield, do exactly what we did. Let Bernardo Silva work his magic in the midfield. Let him, João Moutinho, I agree with you. Man, I would not change a single thing. There's no room in this game for Danilo or Willian.
No.
Absolutely none whatsoever to me. João Moutinho did a phenomenal job the last game. He allows Bernardo Silva and Bruno Fernandes to do their thing in the midfield. Bernardo Silva, I know a lot of people like to see him on the wing. To me, I love him in that position. It's a creative position for him. It allows us to completely open up. It brings just a different dynamic to the way we play, having that little spark of energy and creativity in the middle with him, Bruno Fernandes, and João Moutinho. It's a quicker midfield. It's a faster paced midfield. Mm-hmm. And it allows our you know, left and right backs to get up. You know, it's really, to me, the best way that Portugal lines up is with those three in the midfield. Would you start Mendes over Guerreiro or keep? Because obviously Cancelo is gonna replace Dalot naturally. He's back from suspension. But would you leave Guerreiro or would you bring in Mendes?
I'm gonna say honestly, whatever one lines up, I'm confident. Our left back position, they're both fantastic. I think for either one of these games, both of them can play, man. We're going to be attacking them. So guys that can cross the ball. I know I've seen a lot of Nuno Mendes last year. He's great cross for the ball, but I mean, so is Guerreiro. Guerreiro in previous games, man, even the last tournament, he scored big goals for us. So, I mean, that's not his ideal job. That's not his, that's not why he's there, but he shows he's there for big games. So I'd honestly be okay with both. And then, like you touched up on, João Moutinho, Bernardo Silva, Bruno Fernandes, not only do they add more quickness in the midfield, but in a game that, like against Macedonia, we're going to need to open up spaces. We're going to need some creativity there because they're so solid. They're going to be so hard to break down. Yeah. Sometimes you need those players, especially like a guy like Bernardo Silva. Nobody does it better, man. Good luck getting the ball off that guy. Yeah. He can pull two or three guys, open up space, and score. Yeah. So, yeah, I would not change that 100%.
You know, the other thing, man, and we've talked about this so many times, is our depth. And the one thing I loved against Turkey is that our depth showed up. That depth, every single sub that Fernando Santos made against Turkey, they came on well and they were impactful players. Rafael Leão came on very well. I mean, I think everybody, I got like three texts saying, who is this Leão guy? Like, you know, people who just don't know or don't follow Portuguese soccer as much or whatever. Yeah, who is this guy? Because, you know, he's so strong on the ball. He's so fast. He's so confident. Man, he just brings a whole other dimension to play. Matheus Nunes came on so well. You know, we've talked about him so many times, how good of a player he is. Guys like Pep Guardiola, you know, singing his praises. You know, luckily won't be at Sporting for very much longer. A huge, huge player. João Félix, I felt like came on pretty well as well. So it was one of those things, man. When we talked about what Portugal needed in order to get through these two games, we said one of the biggest things is everyone outside of Cristiano Ronaldo needs to step up and has to step on stage and show that, you know, this is not a one-man team and that we have a ridiculous embarrassment of talent and we can come to play. And that's what we did against Turkey. We just need to do it again against Macedonia.
And I know if you want to rewind and go check out our last podcast, I literally said, I don't care if Ronaldo has a horrendous game, doesn't even get a shot on net. If those other players go and win it for us, I'm going to be so happy because, you know, so many years we could all vouch he's bailed us out. Typically, even the last knockout game to go to the World Cup was against Sweden. He single-handedly brought us over. Really nice to see other players step up. Yeah, talking about Rafael Leão and Matheus Nunes, there's also chemistry there, man. They grew up together, man, since they were 12 years old, 11 years old. They played in the academy together. And, Rafael Leão, as much as, you know, how much I don't respect him in certain aspects outside of the field, I'm also so hurt because of that move, and that's why it's a touchy subject because I do know how special he was. He was talked about for years at our academy, man. We were watching videos of him years before he even made it up. We knew he was special. We know what he can do, and I am not surprised. He came on. He was an impact player. He made a nice through ball to Matheus Nunes, and Matheus Nunes, one thing you got to know about that guy, I don't know what it is, he steps up in big games. If you look through his career, even if he doesn't score, he's hitting the post. He shows up for the big games. He's such a talented player. And Mitch touched up on it earlier. Pep Guardiola said he's one of the best players in the world in the midfield, one of the best midfielders in the world. And he is linked with the move there. So, yeah, going back to what you're saying, the depth we have on this team, which it actually showed last game, and it's just ridiculous, man. It's just ridiculous. It'll be a shame if we don't go to the World Cup.
Our North Macedonian friend makes an interesting point with Elmas on the field. Again, he's returning back from suspension. I feel like we won't play as defensively as we played against Italy. Look, that's either going to be – that could be a terrible thing, actually, for North Macedonia. If they're not playing as defensively, I think Portugal is going to be able to exploit that and take advantage. On the flip side, you also don't want Portugal to get too cocky because you have one little slip-up, and if they get a lucky goal or a well-deserved goal, whatever, but if they get a goal, then you know it's Fort Knox and it's going to be nearly impossible to crack through them. So it is going to be very interesting.
I think to that point, I think where Elmas has the potential to hurt us is, like I said, on the counterattack.
Oh, yeah.
When they're on the counterattack, a player like Elmas can unlock, you know, a defense, quick move here, there. And that's where a player like Elmas can hurt us. But, I mean, with all respect, all due respect to Macedonia, this should be every day of the week. Portugal should be winning this game with the talent that we have. This should be every day in the week.
Italy said, you know, the same thing.
Eating potatoes. Yeah. That's the thing we need to watch out for.
Yeah. I also wanted to give a shout out to Ristovski, the former
Ristovski.
He's the former right back for Sporting. He was best friends with Bruno Fernandes. Yeah, there's a famous clip if you want to look up. He's when Bruno was about to leave. He went on the bus. He's Portuguese, not bad. He said, "Estamos fodidos." That's what he said when he left. I'll never forget that line. So shout out to him. Him and Bruno are going to, I'm sure they're going to have some laughs before the game.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's do some predictions here as we kind of start to go down. And before we get to the Portugal game, let's go to a couple of updates. Path A in UEFA. Wales with a 2-1 win over Austria. Gareth Bale with some fantastic goals there. They will take on the winner of Scotland, Ukraine. Obviously, because of what's happening in Ukraine, that game is going to be played in June. So we won't find out the winner of that until June, which means on Friday's World Cup draw, they will likely say the winner of Path A goes into pot. I believe it'll be pot four, but I'm not 100% on that one. Path B, Poland got through automatically as Russia was booted out of the tournament. Sweden with a 1-0 win over Czech Republic. So it'll be Poland versus Sweden. And obviously then there's path C, was it's Portugal versus North Macedonia. So we're obviously not going to talk about Wales because that game is still up in the air. Poland, Sweden, who wins that one?
You know what? I have a lot of good Polish friends, so if they heard me go against Poland, they'd kill me. So that being said, Lewandowski, I feel like he got robbed his Ballon d'Or. He has a little chip on his shoulder. I think he'll show up and he'll win. Before we move on, I want to ask you guys something. There was some controversy. Well, not so controversy. There was some debate, I should say, because Poland, like you mentioned, went through. They were there was a debate saying that should the third place team in their group, Slovenia, go through and play them instead of Russia? Or there was another team, it slipped in my mind, that had the highest points as the third place position to play Poland so they don't get a free pass. I don't know what your guys' opinion on that. Maybe just touch up on that real quick.
Yeah, I would have been fine with that. I thought the free pass was... I didn't agree with the free pass. I feel like they needed to play a game.
Yeah.
They could choose who that was in as fair a way as possible, but I did not agree with
Poland's free pass. I did not agree with that. I agree with Russia not going, but I don't agree with the free pass. So that's just my...
Yeah, I think had it been a little bit more time, I would have been like, yeah, you can't have the free pass. But I think just given the time frame, it almost would have been a competitive disadvantage. Now, what they could have done, because Scotland and Ukraine are being played in June, what they should have done is said, okay, hey, Poland, you're not going to play your game now until June either against Slovenia or whomever else.
For sure.
And then, so that's what they should have done. But if they weren't going to switch it to June, I'm okay with pushing forward because it would have been a competitive disadvantage to bring a team at the last second into it who haven't had a chance to look at the tape, who haven't had a chance to prepare. So becomes just a little bit different from that aspect.
I'm with you guys 100%. 100%.
So that brings us to the main event for us anyways. Portugal, North Macedonia.
Well, by the way, I picked Sweden to beat Poland.
Oh, you picked Sweden to beat Poland.
I picked Sweden to beat Poland.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know what? Actually, I got to make that pick as well. I will say Sweden will beat Poland. And I'm going to say the reason for that is because Sweden has had that game against the Czech Republic. So they're going to be, you know, already in that right mindset. So I think that'll give them a little bit of the advantage. Plus, so
Paul Sosa kind of left Poland holding the bag after qualification.
Yeah.
They're a little bit in shambles. So
a little bit.
It's a little dirty what he did.
I'm thinking Sweden's gonna edge it out, like you. My business partner's Polish. It's gonna be like, if they lose, but I'm gonna have to say Sweden's gonna win this game.
So Portugal, North Macedonia. Who wins? What's the result? What are we looking at? And we all know what we're all gonna say, but what? Reason it out.
Before saying who I think is going, we all know who I think is gonna win, but I want to say no disrespect. We have a Macedonian viewer. I appreciate you watching. So shout out to you. I think.
Well, hey, he just said he made his prediction. He's saying 2-1 Macedonia, North Macedonia. But he says if North Macedonia loses, he hopes we win the World Cup. So good luck tomorrow. Thanks very much. Good luck tomorrow as well. Enjoy the game. And thank you for tuning in.
Adding on to that, North Macedonia won everybody's hearts. If it was anybody other than Portugal and Canada, I'll be rooting for you guys 100%. But that being said, us at home, so much on the line. Cristiano Ronaldo's potential last World Cup, at least at a higher level. I think we will edge it out. I say 2-0. 2-0. I think we'll get it.
Yeah.
How about you?
I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic. Just I think to some of the points we touched up on here, I think if we score early, if we come out with the same intensity that we did against Turkey and we score early, it's going to force Macedonia to open up. And I think if they do open up, the floodgates could open a little bit. I'm looking more around the 3-0 mark. I feel like it could be one of those games for us, especially at home. The crowd getting behind us. If Ronaldo is on his game and he starts putting some of these chances away, like I say, the floodgates could open a bit. So I'm gonna be a little bit more bullish and go 3-0 for Portugal. Okay.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with Mitch. I think that once that first goal goes in for Portugal, North Macedonia has they have to go on the attack. They have to open it up, and that's when Portugal will be able to put the nail in that coffin. So, yeah, I'd say about 3-4 nil for Portugal to win. The only thing that I hope is Portugal goes up 1-0. I don't want to all of a sudden see them, hey, let's take the gas off the pedal. Let's just sit back and see what happens, because that has disaster written all over it.
And Fernando Santos has to really, really watch that, man. And that's a really good point, Kev, because we saw it against Serbia. We saw it against Turkey. They have a tendency, if they do score early, to let off and drop the gears. They cannot do that. If they score early against Macedonia, you need to hit them again and keep that same level of intensity. Because if you do that and you drop that level of intensity and you don't go for the kill, you allow them to gain confidence, potentially get back in the game, and we cannot have that happen. So that is a really good point, Kev. We cannot have that happen.
I don't want to look too far ahead, but should Portugal win and advance, they'll be seated in pot one or pot A, whichever they're going with, in the World Cup. Germany will be in pot two. The Netherlands will be in pot two. I mean, there is, like, just taking a look at the potential matchups, it's a little scary to say the least. Canada will almost certainly be in pot four. Unless Costa Rica somehow manages to sneak in, and that would be, I mean, there's a 6-goal differential with the United States. So, I mean, that's just not going to happen. So Canada will almost certainly be in pot four. I'm just hoping it's not Portugal, Canada put into a group. That'll be
Steven Ostakiu said he wanted it.
He wants it. Absolutely. He absolutely does. And you know what? In some ways, I think him and Steven Vittoria kind of want to. They want to kind of prove that, hey, look at us. You know, look at what we can do. Look at how we're doing.
And much to what Kevin's saying there, Kevin Geraltz, yes, let's go Canada, man. We watched that game. You know what? I know this is the Portuguese soccer podcast, but I don't want to go on with this podcast without giving a big shout out to Canada. They're playing really good soccer. It's not like because they're in CONCACAF that they had an easy pass. They won their group. They beat big juggernauts like Mexico and States, although they're not at their best. But, man, you look at Team Canada's team, and there's a lot of quality there. David's good. Davies is good. Our left back is good. We call him Sané on the right, Buchanan. He looks exactly like Leroy Sané. We have a lot of good quality, man.
And in net, you know, Canada's looking really good. Milan Borjan doing really good. Look, at the end of the day, John Herdman has really turned that program around. There was some question marks whether he could get the job done with the Canadian men's team after. Because, look, when have we seen a coach go from the women's team, the women's game, over to the men's side? There was a lot of questions whether or not he was going to be able to do it. But he instilled that belief in them. And he instilled, like, hey, let's keep it simple. Let's get down to the basics and let's figure this out. Because, look, CONCACAF is very different than what we see around the world, in the sense of going into Costa Rica, going into, you know, Haiti, going into Honduras. I mean, these are not easy places to play. And you get the officials that are, you know, it's very questionable to say the least. You know, Canada had to really hustle to get to this point. They had a tougher qualification than the United States and Mexico did, because they didn't get a buy into a farther round. They had to start right at the very beginning, and that ended up working out well for them. So kudos to Canada. First time since 86. It'll be very interesting to see how this draw plays out. I hope they get a favorable draw. It'll be really interesting to see what happens.
Really quickly, guys, before we wrap up. So yesterday we were watching the game, and I get a buddy of mine call me, and he goes, Mitch, who is this Steven Ostakiu, and why the hell is he playing for Canada and not for Portugal? We heard Steven Ostakiu yesterday saying that he made the right decision, because remember, Ostakiu did play for Portugal Sub-21, right? Do you guys think Steven Ostakiu made the right decision? And
yes.
Do you think if he didn't, he would have a place in this lesson?
It's funny because I actually work with one of the gentlemen that was commenting earlier, Kevin Geraltz, and we actually talked about it in the lunch hour. Could Steven Ostakiu fit into our national team? And I'd have to say no. As much how good that takes nothing away from, he's a fantastic player. I've been praising this guy for so long. Not only that, I even wanted him on Sporting when he was available. He is now at Porto. Shout out to him. He's doing really good job. But I think with the depth we have, he wouldn't fit. So I got two questions for you guys. One is, who would you root for if Portugal's playing Canada?
Let Kevin answer the question first about your stack.
And then the second one is, would you rather have Canada's coach over Fernand Sanche coaching the national team?
So I'll put you guys on the spot. There's 3 points there. Okay, so to point number one, I don't think Steven Eustáquio would play for Portugal, would fit in this lineup. I do think he made the right decision, and I think that speaks volumes about how far the Canadian national team has gone. That guys like Alphonso Davies, that guys like Steven Eustáquio, guys like Steven Vitoria are choosing to play for Canada, unlike back in the day when Owen Hargreaves went to England instead. And that speaks volumes, and that's when you know that Canada is finally becoming a soccer nation. I'm not saying that they're a dominant, oh my gosh, they're going to be like World Cup contenders here. No. But what I'm saying is they are a respectable team, and they are a respectable nation, and we can finally take pride in our game, take pride in our country, and this is why we want to play for them. So it's great to see that the program has finally turned around. It has been years in the making, and so I'm glad that he chose Canada, to be perfectly honest, because I think this is what we need. To your other two questions, I really hope Portugal doesn't get drawn into a group with Canada. It would tug on my heart, because I really would love to see Canada do as well as they can. Obviously, Portugal is the team that we've grown up with. That's the team that they've always been. I shouldn't say they've always been a great team, but since I can remember, my first memory of Portugal was Euro 96. You know, that's when I first started getting really into it. So as far as my entire time, they've only ever missed the one tournament, World Cup 98. So Portugal's always had that success, so it's easy to always be there. Whereas Canada, other than the Gold Cup in 2000, you know, this is their first time, their first shining moment. I mean, 1994 or 93, when they lost to Australia in the playoff to get were unable to qualify for World Cup 94. And your what was the other question there, Christian? It was
you still didn't answer. If they went up, who would you go for? Who would you slightly lean towards?
It depends on the situation. If it's the first game of the tournament, I'd be okay with a tie. Okay. We're going to leave it with that.
Oh, you're doing the sellout pick. You're doing the sellout pick. Come on.
We'll see what happens on the draw, because it may be a moot point anyways. And then would John Herdman be a good coach for Portugal? I don't think he would be able to handle the egos. He's the type of coach that, you know, you look at like a David Moyes. Right? Why didn't he work out well in Manchester United? Because he does better with the smaller teams where he can inspire them. Whereas with Man United, you've got the egos, you've got the players, that they don't need that, right? They just need someone to control their egos. So he would not, as I love John Herdman, I think he's going to do fantastic. I think he's going to have a lot of suitors looking at him after the World Cup. But yeah, I don't think he would be a fit for Portugal after Fernand Sanche.
Well, your first question is easy.
I never
cheer for any team outside of Portugal. I would cheer for Canada in the other games, but that's not even a question for me. And to the coach point, I not think he could handle the egos. To Kev's point, I don't think he could handle the pressure in Portugal. From the media, from the fans, it's a different. Nobody expects Canada to make the World Cup. Portugal, it's a different, football as a whole is viewed differently. It's a religion here. To Canadian terms, it's like hockey is here. Yeah. The expectation is completely different. The pressure is completely different. The culture is completely different. And that's where I think, not to take anything away from his tactical knowledge or his ability and what he's done. I think he's done a wonderful job with the Canadian national team. I think there's a couple of factors there that I just don't think I could be wrong, potentially, maybe he just needs the experience of it. But I think those are the two things he would seriously struggle in going into a national team like a Portugal.
Yeah, and just to answer my own question, Portugal, obviously, I would want him to win 3-4-0. When it comes to Portugal, I love Portugal, and I put him first. But that being said, I do want Canada to do
well.
It wouldn't even hurt me. I'd cheer every goal.
But you cheer every goal. If Canada scores, I'd be cheering too. Right?
Really?
I'd be pissed. I'd be like, you're losing to Canada.
But 100%. And then for not such, and you don't hear this often, but I'm picking for not such for sure.
Christian is a changed man. He loves Fernando Sanchez. I know. And then when Portugal wins tomorrow, Fernando Sanchez is going to be leading us in Qatar.
I will say this. I will say this, and we'll maybe end on this note. And I said it on the last podcast that you know, a part of me would almost, you know, for the long-term benefit of the selection, it would almost be beneficial that we don't go to the World Cup. To me, tomorrow, as much as I want, with my whole heart, I want us to win. If we lose to Macedonia, to me, it's a win-win almost for us, because if we did lose, as much as it would hurt all of us, it would mean Fernand Sanch, and it's ushering in a new era that I think this lesson needs.
And we could go all out for Canada.
I've been saying this for a while, boys.
And then I'll buy my Canada jersey.
The new era starts in Germany 2024. That's when the new era is, the post, you know, Pep, Ronaldo, Fernand Sanch, that's when that begins. So here's hoping Portugal gets the job done tomorrow. Mitch, Christian, I'm Kevin. Thank you all for tuning in.
Forza Portugal.
Forza.
Forza, boys.
Well, don't forget to like and subscribe. All
right? And yes, boss, we are Portuguese Canadians, so we're loving both teams. So enjoy the game tomorrow. Have a good one, everyone.
Take it easy, guys.
Cheers.